Welcome to the Legally Sound Smart Business Show, your weekly look at legal news and questions in the business world. Here are your hosts, Nasser Pasha and Matt Staub.
All right, welcome to Legally Sound Smart Business. This is Nasser Pasha.
And this is Matt Staub.
Welcome to our 13th episode. Well into the new year now. We can stop saying Happy New Year, right? We're at the cutoff.
Yeah. Well, if you thought it was a cutoff last week, then it's definitely a cutoff this week.
I'm just trying to find a social norm. So if this is the time to stop, I'd be glad to stop. That'd be great.
We can just move on to getting ready for the next holiday, which is...
What is it?
I think Martin Luther King Jr. Day, I think, is this month. That's a federally recognized holiday.
That's true. And then after that, Groundhog Day. And it's not Groundhog's Day, it's Groundhog Day, for those of you that are particular.
What an exciting start to this week.
Well, let's get started. We have a fun article for the first one.
Yeah, so this is pretty interesting. Ryan Seacrest, I didn't even know that he had this company that he's involved with, but he's being sued by BlackBerry. He essentially created this product that, if you haven't seen it, you'll have to look it up, do a quick Google search, but it looks like basically having a hybrid of a BlackBerry and an iPhone. It looks like a case, I'm guessing, that goes around your iPhone, and at the bottom it has this little keyboard that, if you've ever had a BlackBerry or used one, looks pretty much exactly like a BlackBerry keyboard. It's no surprise that BlackBerry's caught onto this, and now they're initiating this lawsuit.
Actually, I'm taking a look at it. It looks pretty neat. I'm sending you a link, and we'll post this on our post. It's basically image side by side looking at these keyboards. They look pretty similar.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's just a keyboard. But despite the lawsuit and all that, this typo keyboard is pretty cool because I think a lot of people miss that tactile feel for the keyboards on their phone. And this actually matches the best of both worlds there.
Yeah, and I was someone who had been a BlackBerry user. I had a couple BlackBerries, and then I think it was a few years ago I made the switch to iPhone, and I still have problems at times typing in the touchscreen. And I don't know, the keys are so small. I guess the keys on this are small too and on a BlackBerry, but it's just much easier. You know what you're hitting as opposed to a touchscreen on the iPhone where I think I'm hitting buttons all the time, and sometimes I just get nowhere because I've accidentally hit backspace every single time when I've tried to hit a letter.
Yeah.
Like around P or O or one of those letters. But I guess this would make the iPhone pretty long, right? I haven't seen this actual product, but if you put this keyboard on the bottom of it, it seems like it would make it a pretty long phone.
Yeah, I mean, the iPhone's not too big as far as the length goes, but compared to some of the other bigger phones. But I'm just wondering, I mean, a keyboard is a keyboard. There's only so many ways to do that, and BlackBerry saying it's a copy and paste, and even you thought that they look pretty similar. And I don't necessarily disagree, but then I wonder if you take any kind of regular phone keyboard, isn't it going to look the same? You know, it's a QWERTY keyboard with similar symbols, and I guess the shape of the keys look somewhat similar. They're both black,
yeah,
with white lettering.
It's tough because it has to be small, obviously, because it's got to be on the phone. Like right now, I have two different laptops up and running. One's a Mac and one's a PC, and the keyboards look exactly the same. So can one of those companies sue the other? I mean, it's a keyboard.
Yeah.
I mean, just looking at the picture, it does look almost exactly the same. There's a couple keys that this, and the name is a little bit weird, Typo. I don't know. That's just struck me as weird, but it's a few extra keys that Typo has that BlackBerry doesn't. But you know what I think this is? This lawsuit may be the best revenue model for BlackBerry right now, just because
exactly.
they've been struggling.
They're failing like crazy, and this is their last-ditch effort to get some funds for their intellectual property. But you know what? QWERTY keyboards are actually patented. They were patented back in the 1800s, and I think that patent's been expired, or as far as I know, I don't think there's any more licensing going on there. But this is for copyright infringement, the actual look and feel of the keyboard itself. And so the court's going to look at if there's any kind of substantial similarity between the two. But again, in a relative sense to the other keyboards, I just don't see how Typo isn't unique enough to not withstand that infringement.
Yeah, like you said, you can only do so many different things with a keyboard unless you want to rearrange the letters or something and make it really crazy, but no one's going to use that. This is another thing. It's just because Ryan Seacrest is involved, I bet that didn't help the situation either.
Yeah, no doubt. And by the way, these haven't even started selling yet. Well, they've been selling, but they're pre-sale. So
yeah.
No one's actually has any of these.
Right.
But I honestly would buy one. It's pretty cool, whether it's infringing upon another copyright or not.
It's only $99, so it's not too bad. I would consider it too, I guess. I don't know. Like I said, I have trouble at times using my iPhone with the touchscreen. So I guess anything that would help me out would be nice.
Well, we'll post an image and you listeners can decide for yourself whether they're same or not. I don't know. We'll just do an informal poll. If you're listening now, if you think they're similar, raise your hand. Okay. And then those that don't think they're similar, raise your hand. Okay, it's about even, it looks like, from what I can tell.
That's what I expected. By the way, how many things is Ryan Seacrest involved in? Does he need to be involved in more things?
I know.
It's crazy.
That's true.
All right, I don't want to talk about him too much, though. So, all right, I'll get into the first question. We got a bunch of shorter questions this week, so that's nice for me, since I read most of them. Okay, this one comes from a real estate company in Hollywood, California. What happens to the debt of my company if I dissolve it?
Hollywood. So I think we kind of covered this a little bit. I think another company was dissolving their company while they were being sued.
Right.
This is a little different because this is talking about the debt of the company, but I think the answer is the same, is that when you dissolve the company, if the company itself has any assets, then you still need to make sure you pay your debts through those assets. Because if you end up transferring any of those assets, whether it's cash or supplies, etc., to the owners of the business after it dissolves, then you could be personally liable, or those owners could be personally liable for up to the amount of those assets. And if there's some fraudulent transfers in there, then that can make things worse as well.
Once you're winding up, you have to pay the debts that you have up to essentially what your assets are. And so the people that contributed capital are only liable up to the amount they contribute.
And don't forget about taxes. You still have to file your last year's taxes and so forth, and market final and so forth.
Right. And if there's unpaid payroll taxes, IRS is going to come after those business owners.
Yeah.
Even if the corporation's saying they don't have the money, they're going to come after those business owners and collect that. Like I said, that's one of the few things the IRS doesn't mess around with is payroll taxes. If you owe that, you're going to be owing that for as long as they can come after you.
No doubt. And so even though when you're dissolving a company, a lot of times that could mean a bad thing in the sense you're closing your business, but don't cut corners. It's still important to talk to the appropriate professionals, whether it's your attorney or your CPA, to make sure you do it properly. The last thing you want is a business that you no longer operate and own coming back to haunt you a year later.
Right. That's the most important thing, is you got to make sure you take the right steps too, and make sure you actually dissolve the company. There's a difference between just ceasing to do business and actually dissolving a company.
And we've talked about that before. People forget to dissolve it, and then they just have the entity supposedly doing business as far as the Secretary of State's concerned every year. And then franchise taxes accrue, other liabilities may accrue, and so forth. And all of a sudden, you have a big bill.
Right. As always, just make sure you cross those T's and dot those I's.
Nice.
All right. Well, we talked a little bit about tax, but we're going to talk more about tax. Another exciting tax thing. This has to do with the healthcare tax credit.
Yeah, we touched on this last week. This is our Obamacare and Affordable Care Act month that we're going to cover this law in context of small businesses. And so this is talking about that tax credit for not only small businesses of less than 50, but also less than 25 as well.
Right. And so this tax credit, businesses can get up to, it's worth up to 50% of their contribution towards their employees' premiums. So for 2014, there's some things that are changing, a couple major changes. One is just the increase in what the tax credit is. So I believe last year it was about 35% or 25% for some bigger companies. Now it's up this year to the maximum credit is 50% of the premiums paid and 35% for small tax-exempt employers. That's a significant increase, up to 50% of the premiums. That'll definitely help out some of those small businesses. Another thing is eligibility.
Yeah, so to be eligible for this particular one that we're referring to is be an employer with fewer than 25 full-time or equivalent employees and pay an average wage of less than $50,000 per year and pay at least 50% of the employee's health insurance premiums for full-time employees only.
And also, eligible employers can get it for two consecutive taxable years. But I think another takeaway here is the smaller the business, the bigger the tax credit they can get. This is really helping out those really small businesses. I don't know what the ultimate end result would be in the bottom line in terms of money spent versus money saved, but this is definitely something that was put in place to help out small businesses.
Yeah, this is probably the best thing coming out for small business under the act. The only thing I don't like is that it's not making taxes any easier. I mean, of course, they have a whole separate form for it. for claiming this small business healthcare tax. So that's just more and more reliance upon these professionals that have already a difficult job.
Yeah. Anytime there's a new tax issue that comes out, there's always more forms or longer forms. And yeah, exactly what you said. Taxes never get easier. I guess I should take that back. Something we brought up before on the home office deduction definitely got a lot easier. But for the most part, 95% of the time, it just makes things more difficult.
No doubt. And did we mention already these insurance policies still have to be purchased through SHOP, through the Small Business Health Options Program Marketplace? I don't think there are any exceptions to that, except there are some, I think we mentioned last week, there are some states that actually don't even have that marketplace available yet.
Right. I think that's the only exception to it. So pretty hard rule there. And one last thing, you can, if a small business didn't owe tax for the year, it's possible to carry the tax credit back or forward to other tax years. So that's another nice thing that's being done here.
That's actually a good point. You know, everything regarding depreciation and so forth, a lot of these deductions can be carried over. And a lot of times when people don't pay taxes, especially in the beginning of their business, they lack the need, or they have a perception that they don't need a tax professional to actually do that. They can do it on their own, whether it's through TurboTax or what have you. And these are some things that can actually save you quite a bit in the long term rather than just this tax year.
People ask me about TurboTax all the time, and I say it's a great tool as long as you know what you're doing. You still have to have a pretty good idea of what goes where and what you can take and what you can't. I saw a commercial recently for TurboTax, and I do actually find it pretty interesting. I don't know if you've seen this, the way they go about describing it. The commercial is pretty well done, but it talks about when you do your taxes, it's basically a summary of your last year. I know I didn't get it exactly how they put it. It's basically your last year in a story. And I was like, well, but who, no one looks, I mean, I do, but most people don't look forward to doing their taxes. Like, that's not fun for a lot of people. I have fun, but I'm a little bit crazy in that aspect.
I haven't used TurboTax in a while, but I know there was a fun part of it, and I'm sure it's even gotten better, where it would take you through step by step, and you get to click buttons and little animations here and there. And especially before, when I was actually got a return, which was fun, you'd actually see the dollar amount go up, and that was a cool aspect of it.
Yeah, that's true. I had it 1 year. I didn't end up using it. I just wanted to check it out just to see what it looked like. And you're right, it's very user-friendly. So it, like I said, it does a great job. You just still need to know what you're looking for. So something to keep in mind.
Well, speaking of, our sponsor is TurboTax, right? No, I'm just joking. They might as well be.
I was trying to think of a competitor of TurboTax, but I couldn't think of any.
There's not much, right?
There's some out there. I forget what they are. I use the free fillable forms that the IRS... It's not an IRS product, but they link it through.
You're a tax attorney. You're the only one that actually fills it in by hand, basically.
It's like I said, I have fun doing it. So I wish I could do it more than once a year, but unfortunately, I can't. Now that I'm married too, I only get to do one return instead of, I used to do my wife's return when we were just dating. Now I have to only get to do one return. So it's really taken the fun out of this.
Oh, that's great. Okay, well, let's take a look at our next question. I'll take this one since I heard your complaint in the beginning about reading all of them. I know it's so hard. This is from a mobile app company in San Jose, California. Josie, I'm looking to secure investors for my startup. How do I value my company if it has no revenue? Well, this is a funny question because how many of these companies are not only they have revenue, but they're going public without making a profit? Twitter, well, Facebook was profitable, right? When it went public, I don't know. But a lot of these IPOs aren't, and a lot of these startup companies that get funded aren't. But here we're talking about pre-revenue startups, and there's plenty of VCs that invest in, I don't want to say plenty, but there's a lot of VCs that do invest in pre-revenue startups. And one of the biggest questions is, how do you value your company? And you have to be able to stand behind that.
Right. And especially where in the stage that it sounds like this company is, sounds like it's right at the beginning, so they're not going to have revenue to show anyways. This isn't exactly the same as a Twitter, or I know another big one was Pinterest. Twitter's pulling in revenue now because they have all those ads. I don't use Pinterest. I don't know if it has revenue that's coming in, but those are huge companies that are getting huge valuations.
They're spending a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're making a lot.
But there's obviously different ways you can value a company. I used to watch Shark Tank a lot.
Yeah.
You have all these different people come in, and I always wondered how they come up with their valuations because it's all over the map. You have some people that oh, it seems pretty realistic. And other ones, like, there's no way. This is just terrible valuation. So I guess that's what this person is getting at with their question.
And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of literature out there on some ideas. But from a conceptual point of view, I think the first thing that pre-revenue startups have to understand is that their worth is their team, their idea, and that's pretty much it.
Right.
And those two things alone aren't that much at all. So the only way to really boost up your valuation is to really know how to sell yourself, that you know what you're doing, that this has huge potential and low risk. So whoever is investing in your company, as far as valuations going, they're going to base it upon their understanding of how they value it individually. And so I think we had Tyler from Startup Garage, right? And we talked a little bit about financials and so forth and your business plan and so forth. And those things are important, but I also know a lot of investors that hardly look at the financials because it's accepted that that's way overblown. They just want to understand the market size and that you know what you're doing and you have a plan to actually monetize your idea to actually generate a profit.
Yeah, like you said, the market's going to dictate kind of what the value is. And what's going to come down in these situations is the people behind it. And I guess if they had some sort of very unique intellectual property, that could help too.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to come down to the people. I mean, really, the bottom line is this. If it's a good idea, it's going to get money. And so if investors think it's a good idea, then they'll contribute and the business will get that money.
No doubt. Well, good luck to you. I hope they do get funded. It's definitely a hard world out there in early startup phase. But I think there's a lot of information out there that helps companies like yourself to kind of get through this time.
Right. This is something that a lot of startups are going to, it's the same sort of experience. So it's definitely a lot of info out there. Let's take our break here. And some big news for us, some big news, Super Bowl commercials, prices just came out. I guess this is the time to tell everyone that we're doing a Super Bowl commercial this year.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. Hopefully it actually shows. They're worried that it may not have room or not, so we'll just have to see.
Yeah, so the prices this year between 3.8 and 4 million. So it was kind of a hefty price tag, and we had to take out a huge loan. But
let's just say we got on the lower end of the 3.8 to 4 million.
Yeah. Makes a big difference.
Well, I'm excited for, just to speak about football for a second, is this weekend, which will be, as this airs yesterday, the Chargers are playing in the playoffs. Since our firm's based out of San Diego, this is a pretty fun time for us right now.
We should just record two different reactions. We can be really excited that the Chargers... Well, I'm indifferent to the Chargers. I'd rather them win than lose, but it's not my favorite team. But it's nice to be in a city where the team wins. But anyways, I just needed to get the 2 cents there. We should record two things, say how excited we were if they won or how sad we are that they lost, and then we can just edit whichever one.
Well, I'd rather just assume that they won, and I definitely enjoyed the game yesterday since they did win, hopefully.
But with Super Bowl commercials, like I said, the prices just came out or the cost just came out. And there's some articles out there saying that paying that price tag is worth it. And some of these companies are doing multiple commercials. Like I know Budweiser usually does a couple, and I think Coca-Cola used to do a few. I don't know if they're still continuing to do that. But I mean, obviously you're getting exposed to a ton of people all around the world. So that's something that you can't get anywhere else. But do you think this 3.8 to 4 million per commercial is worth it for some of these companies?
No, I'm surprised that people are saying that it is. I wouldn't think they would be. And it seems like in the past they haven't been. But obviously some of these marketing agencies think they are, and they obviously keep spending that money.
Right. And my take has always been this, that if you either have to have something that's really, really good, or if you can't come up with something really, really good, make it really, really bad.
Yeah.
Because you want to be talked about one way or the other. You don't want to be in that middle ground where it's like, oh, that was a good commercial, but no one talks about it. So
that's a good point, because you're up against pretty hefty competition on that day.
Yeah. And this is the cream of the crop here. This is everyone brings their best commercial to the table for the Super Bowl. I guess we have the Olympics coming up soon thereafter, so that's another big event. But
that's true.
This is the most concentrated, you know, it's a set period of time. It's 3.5-4 hours, especially the last few years. Every Super Bowl has been really close, so all those fourth quarter commercials have been, you take a risk when you do the fourth quarter commercials, because it could be a blowout and people might not be paying attention. But the last couple of years it's been worth it.
That's true. Well, one thing that I keep thinking about with the Super Bowl and the law is all these small businesses that do promotions and they use the word Super Bowl or the big game. which are actually trademark terms. And if you use that, especially with any kind of publicity, then a little company called the NFL will send you a demand letter basically telling you to stop. And it will happen.
Yeah, I think we talked about that in another episode. That was NFL came after, or I guess that was a guy who won a lawsuit against the NFL, but didn't collect any money somehow, which I still don't understand.
Yeah.
We need to get him on as a guest. He can tell his story.
No doubt. That's a good idea.
All right. Like I said, we got that Super Bowl commercial coming up. We still haven't started on it, so we got a couple weeks.
We have time.
Yeah. All right. We'll get into the next story here. This deals with, I believe it's someone in Arkansas, a franchisor, is suing the Department of Labor over their workers being classified as employees. The interesting thing here is they're not paid workers. It's volunteers that are working for these consignment businesses, and they're, I guess the Department of Labor classified them as employees, which obviously when you have volunteers, you don't want to have happen.
Yeah, when I first heard about this story, I didn't quite understand it, because I'm not familiar with this whole consignment shop thing and why they need volunteers in the first place. But I started doing a little research, and apparently almost every one of these consignment events have volunteers, and it's part of the industry standard for whatever reason. And there's different setups, you know, where basically you work a four-hour shift, and then in exchange you can go like an hour earlier to the event to get your first pickings of
right.
I don't know, whatever you stuff is there.
Yeah, that's a good deal.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. It seems strange to me. And then you see these pictures of all these volunteers that are, because there's a lot of people, and most of the consigners, that the ones that are actually putting their stuff there, aren't the ones that are actually selling it. So someone has to do it. But what do you think? You know, obviously the Department of Labor has their opinion, and the rule's pretty clear. Basically, if it's a for-profit company and they're providing any kind of value as far as putting their time in, then they're more likely to classify them as employees, and you're going to owe wages to them. But what about it from a conceptual point of view? Is this a fair thing? They're volunteering. There's no one's forcing them to do it.
Right. Well, I mean, I guess they're saying they're violating the minimum wage laws because they're not paying them the minimum wage. Yeah. But from a conceptual standpoint, they're volunteering. There's so many other businesses you can go after that are actually paying people as independent contractors instead of employees. Also the ones that should be easier targets than this. I don't know how you go after companies that have volunteers. I mean, I get the motives behind the people volunteering. I'm sure that's not everyone that's volunteering. Some people are just nice and don't need any sort of benefit to volunteer. But I guess I disagree with what the Department of Labor came down with.
Well, here's the counter argument, though. This isn't a nonprofit organization. This is a for-profit venture. And it's almost kind of deceiving for these individual workers. They work for 4 hours for a very small return, so to speak. And then who benefits is these companies that hold these consignment events. And if they were to actually pay individuals to sell the stuff, then they would have a much lower profit. So they're benefiting from this. And I think the Fair Labor and Standards Act has been designed to prevent exploitation. And I'm not necessarily saying this is exploitation, but it could be a slippery slope to that, I suppose.
Right. I guess you're right. They're probably generating more revenue by having these people here, and they're going to spend more money. And on the flip side, they're also not paying them. So their revenue is going up. Their expenses are, in a way, going down, kind of. I mean, they're getting more benefit than they're paying out zero. So I can see the argument there. But if you look at the motives behind it, it does change things a little bit. But I'm still kind of on the fence about this. I don't necessarily agree with it.
Well, again, I was doing a search, and just to compare, a religious organization, a church, was doing the same thing, and they were having volunteers and so forth. Now, to me, that's a big difference, right? If you have a business that's doing it for a profit versus a nonprofit organization, that seems different.
Well, I think that church was also allowing the people to come in an hour before everyone else, and
I don't know if they were or not, but even if they did, you know.
Yeah, obviously that's much different than this. There's a clear benefit that's given to these volunteers at the consignment shops.
And I also saw another one where they give a percentage of the sales to the volunteers. Now that makes more sense, you know?
Yeah.
At least they're getting compensated for what they're doing.
We'll have to monitor this and see how it turns out. Because this, I mean, for this purse or this franchise, there's 63 franchisees nationwide. So this will be not only for this company, but for... there's a lot of other companies out there doing this, and so this will be a big decision that gets handed down. I guess it probably won't be a decision getting handed down.
I really think you should go undercover and volunteer for one of these things. I'm sure they have them in San Diego. You could bring your mic and record your experience.
The mics we record with are so big, I don't think it would be very secretive. Not really undercover if I have a huge microphone.
That's true.
I brought it. The one time when I recorded somewhere else, I brought it with me, and every single person asked me what that was. So I'll get one that can feed through my shirt like I'm an undercover person in a sting, and then maybe that'll be better.
All right. We'll play the audio next week. That'll be good. Keep us updated.
And I will be recording next week's episode from the local prison, detained for recording things illegally, but that's fine.
That's true.
All right. Last question. And this one comes from San Antonio, Texas.
Nice.
What can I do if my business partner won't give me access to the funds in our bank account? Aren't I entitled to half as a partner as well as access?
Well, this is not a good sign, obviously. In fact, this is one of the most prominent issues when you have partners that are fighting or about to split is access to funds. First thing you have to remember, there's a difference between bank procedures and what's allowed in your entity, whether it's a partnership, LLC, or corporation. So bank procedures are basically very simple, is that when you open the account, they ask you who's the authorized party, and that authorized party can add and remove people. And though the bank does take a look at resolutions and corporate resolutions, it's very difficult unless you're an authorized user to add people to the bank account, even if you have paperwork saying that you're part owner. So if you're the business partner, I'm not sure what kind of entity type you may have, but generally managers or officers of a corporation or managers of an LLC are the ones that decide how that's done and or what's in your operating agreement. So in theory, if you're an equal business partner and maybe you're a manager of your LLC, if you have any kind of controlling interest, you should be able to control how much access you have to the bank account.
You're exactly right. But the way I'm reading this question makes me think that this looks more like an informal partnership that was formed, which might get this person into trouble.
Yeah, that might make it more difficult. If you don't have a partnership agreement and it's just kind of 50% ownership, then technically you should have control and access to it.
Right.
But then the question is, how are you going to force him to do that, him or her? And that's another topic, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I go to banks every week asking for access to accounts of businesses, and they never give me anything. So pretty difficult.
Exactly. It's not that easy, yeah. But obviously, if I think what you're asking is if you can show that you're entitled to it, then that business partner is going to be more apt to negotiate with you in that respect. And so if that's your ultimate goal, I would definitely retain counsel to send a demand letter to your business partner, or at least engage that attorney to figure out what your rights actually are by looking at your operating agreement and looking at your corporate structure.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of how this turns out, it just seems like a business you might want to get out of, because if this is what your business partner's doing, it's a huge red flag for moving forward.
I'm sure they already know that. They're already like, crap, you know, I'm into this business with this person. I don't have access to the funds. I'm sure that this is like not the first red flag they've seen.
Right. That's true. Well, thank you, San Antonio, for that question. We'll get into the last story we have this week. This comes from my home state of Indiana, and I try not to make fun of it, but when they have stories like this, and it wasn't just a story, it was actually they had a person out there on the streets, but we don't usually mention the articles, but this article is titled, Store Owners Say Bad Weather is Bad for Business. I don't even really get how someone spent time writing this, but essentially, for those of you who are in California, if you don't know anyone outside of California, the weather's been really bad the last week. I had actually had a friend in town who was visiting from the Midwest, and his flight got canceled, so he had to go back a couple of days later. But my point is, this brings up a big issue. All this bad weather, people aren't going to leave their house, or maybe, especially if you're in the restaurant industry, you can't get deliveries for food, so you can't even serve people, even if you could get customers. So, like I said, this isn't an issue that really surfaces in California, maybe in the parts where it snows, but it's just something for businesses to think about, and maybe it's a way for businesses that do sell products to post something up online. I don't really know how to go about solving this, or just maybe sucking it up for the 1 or 2 weeks a year where this is an issue.
Well, this also reminds me, yes, for example, Southern California may not be affected by the cold weather, but every region has their issues. I don't know if you remember, we had the fires in San Diego and other places in Southern California too, and business shut down at that time, and or the blackout in San Diego as well. And then you have the hurricane in Houston and so forth, and all these things. That's why I think when we talk about the world economy, infrastructure is so important in order for business itself. And these are some things that, again, local government and your local community can really help out in, is being able to be responsive to these kind of issues.
The blackout that we had in San Diego a few years ago, the day that happened, my wife and I were packing up our old apartment because we were moving into our new spot the next day.
Oh, man.
And we didn't really have everything together. And then the power went out and it was out for pretty long time. I think it came back on in the middle of the night. So that was a pretty rough experience because I had to go get the key and at our new place, and like all this stuff had to be done, but everyone was going crazy on the streets because all the power was out. I remember I walked by some restaurant or bar and they were just selling everything they had for like half price because stuff was going to melt, or I think it was some ice cream place. So it was a pretty chaotic time. Of course, the one time I move from one place to the other, that's what happened. So hope that doesn't happen the next time I move.
No, but it's true. So, I mean, I sympathize them. Bad weather is bad for business. I think it's warmed up a little bit throughout the Midwest, and I'm sure by Monday when this podcast airs, it's going to be fine, but cold weather does affect it.
Unless you have anything. I don't know if there's really anything these businesses can do about it. I think it's just something that you have to get through every year, and some years it's worse than others.
I would probably advise them to sue the weatherman. I think that's the only option.
Even if the weatherman said it, exactly what it's going to be.
Yeah, he has to be accurate to the degree. If not, then I would file a lawsuit. All right, well, I think that's our episode for the week. Thank you for joining us once again. And I don't know if you mentioned last week, but make sure you keep on sending your questions in to ask@legallysoundsmartbusiness.com. And you can also check out our website to see that form on the very right to enter in your question. And don't forget to add what your business is and where you're from so we can help answer your question.
Exactly. Perfect.
All right, well, have a good week.
And keep it sound and keep it smart.
Oh, nice. I was wondering if you're going to put that in there.
This has been the Legally Sound Smart Business Show with your hosts, Nasser Pasha and Matt Staub. The Legally Sound Smart Business Show is your weekly look at legal news and questions in the business world. Legally Sound Smart Business is a podcast that is intended but not promised or guaranteed to be current, complete, or up to date, and should in no way be taken as an indication of future results. No attorney-client relationship is created by listening or submitting questions to the podcast. The podcast does not constitute legal advice, but rather is offered only for general informational and educational purposes. You should not act or rely on any information in the podcast without first seeking the advice of an attorney. The opinions expressed in the podcast reflect the views of those individuals and do not necessarily represent the views of any other individual or business. For more information about the Legally Sound Smart Business Show, visit LegallySoundSmartBusiness.com.